Welcome to the Sourcing Hero podcast, produced by UNA, a group purchasing organization that empowers sourcing heroes, and Art of Procurement, the world's largest procurement podcast network. I'm your host, Kelly Barner. The goal of the Sourcing Hero podcast is to capture the epic stories of people who are rising up and beating the odds to create exceptional value within procurement, directly from those heroes themselves. Today, my guest on the Sourcing Hero podcast is Jack Quarles. Jack is the Vice President of Services Procurement at Brightfield and the author of three best-selling books, including one of my favorites, Expensive Sentences, Debunking the Common Myths That Derail Decisions and Sabotage Success. He has experience with talent optimization and cost reduction, and has firsthand procurement experience working as the Director of Corporate Procurement at Sallie Mae and consulting to numerous Fortune 100 and mid-tier companies. So hello, Jack. Thank you for joining me on the podcast.
It's so great to talk to you again, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
So for folks that you don't already know or who haven't read any of your books, can you provide a little bit more background on your experience?
Absolutely. I sort of fell into procurement after business school and have been there for almost 25 years since in a number of different disciplines, largely consulting to external clients, but also in-house at a number of places, and starting in the fields of telecom expense management, graduating to more utilities, and then really all around indirect expenses. The books I've written were in response to specific issues that came up in my career that I faced and try to answer those questions. So I wrote a book called How Smart Companies Save Money, which was just to give an introduction to smaller companies that really didn't know much about procurements and to introduce to the CEO, hey, what this function did. I co-authored a book called Same Side Selling that speaks about the collaboration between the buyer and seller. I wrote that with Ian Altman, who's an expert sales trainer, and we had a lot of fun really fleshing out the optimal buyer-seller relationship. And then it got to Expensive Sentences, the book you referred to.
So to that point, and this book is one that for anybody in procurement who hasn't read it, I definitely suggest reading it, both because it will give you things to do in terms of handling some of these arguments people make, but it will also give you a good laugh because pretty much all of these expensive sentences or some variation of them are things that procurement hears all the time. So the idea of an expensive sentence is it's something that someone outside of procurement, or in some cases in procurement, says that's sort of an indication of their mindset that ends up leading to waste or unnecessarily costing more money. So Jack, since I have the opportunity to talk to you, I'm curious about whether you have a favorite expensive sentence.
you explain them well, and I don't like any of them, Kelly. but there's some that we hear more than others. That's exactly right. I think these expressions like, you get what you pay for, or, we can handle that, or, we're different. That's a great one.
Oh, right? That's the big one.
our group is special. They came out of my frustration as a young procurement lad, feeling very confident in my analysis skills and in my skills in going out to the marketplace and negotiating with suppliers, but then, reaching that barrier that we all face of the internal adoption and really getting the results into the organization. So that's what they're about, but that's a good question. I think there are a few that weren't in the book that maybe have come up in the last few years. We can't do that since the pandemic, for example, things related to the new and the new world we're in.
Oh my gosh. Well, things have certainly not been made simpler. And in particular, they've not been made simpler around the primary topic that we're going to focus on today, which is contingent workforce and services procurement. Just very quickly, first of all, what exactly is the difference between contingent workforce and services procurement? And what are some of the big things that you're seeing in this area right now?
Absolutely. And I can maybe get to that most efficiently by explaining a little bit of my background, joining Brightfield 3 years ago. As a traditional procurement experience, I really didn't have much or any contact with HR or talent until I joined Brightfield and got to work in the area of staffing and the contingent workforce, and then how that expands and meets with the services procurement world. And it's very exciting because I think that the HR and procurement spaces are collaborating more than ever. At Brightfield, our chief product, our asset, is talent data exchange. And that exchange part is important because we have 40% of Fortune 500 companies, as well as hundreds of other companies, contributing to our database of actual staffing assignments on an ongoing basis. So that gives us a asset of data to research that shows us, well, who's hiring who in the contingent workforce. Now, what we mean by that is anybody that's not a full-time employee. And I think we've all encountered this and see how this area is growing. A lot of the tech companies, the name brands we know, you know, Google and Facebook and others, often have more than half of their actual workforce as not employees, but contingent workers that are hired on an assignment basis, on an interim basis, to perform sort of traditional temp duties. Maybe that's administrative or manning facilities, but also a huge swath of it is what we focus on most in Brightfield, which is the digital workforce, IT.
Now, when you think about these categories, and you actually called this out, you talked about the fact that procurement and HR are collaborating these days more than ever. What's the health meter like on that procurement HR relationship right now?
That's a great question. And I certainly think it's improving. And we just see so many clients where this collaboration is getting closer. And there's more sort of cross-pollination between the two groups. Now, of course, procurement's got a point of view that they're traditionally pegged to in terms of cost savings.
Yes.
But of course, more and more procurement is being asked to speak to diversity or quality or timeliness and performance, lots of other things as well. And that's where I think it's very natural that we're working more closely with HR. So on the HR side, again, as this expense grows greater and greater proportionally within the company, and we see that so much money is being paid to external parties, not just employees and not just consultants, but this group of staff of resources that come and perform a specific purpose, there's a need to manage that. And what we can do at Brightfield is take all those assignments that are initially job requisitions that hiring managers open and say, hey, I need somebody to fulfill this role, or I need 30 people to work on this IT project. We build off of the skills and then put that into a standard taxonomy that we can then use across the board and across industries and across multiple clients to say who's getting paid what in different areas for different skills. And so when I say that word taxonomy, of course, that's a word we love in procurement because it indicates getting to what we're buying, putting the right name on it so we can understand the value it brings and how to compare it to what's offered in the marketplace.
Now, I had a really interesting conversation with somebody the other day. They told me one of the best ways to really understand what motivates another function in the enterprise is to figure out, quote, what they're on the hook for. So, as you know, as you had said, procurement is traditionally on the hook for savings, first and foremost, but also things like risk management and, as you had said, diversity. What is the HR equivalent of savings? What is HR predominantly on the hook for?
So often now, and especially in the market today, it is simply getting the skills, bringing the skills into the company in a timely manner and having those having it work out. So a great example that I can share with one of our clients who's a West Coast healthcare provider, and I think this kind of illustrates a few different aspects of that. During the COVID crisis, this healthcare provider lost a lot of money because a lot of parts of healthcare sort of shut down for a while. We were brought in, Brightfield was brought in to bring its expertise and help the company save money. So we were looking at that at the beginning of 2021, and we used our database to say, hey, this is how much all your people can get paid. So this is where you are in reference to the marketplace. Here's where you're paying your nurses too much. Here's where you might pay them more. Here's where you are in your admin professionals, et cetera. And then we advised them on a sourcing exercise to go out to the marketplace and talked to a bunch of suppliers. And indeed, we were set to found great savings and found great rate improvements in the order of 10% overall over a huge category. So that was exciting. However, once we started putting that in place, the world kept moving. And the first thing we saw was that in May and June, on the West Coast, they were experiencing a real baby boom. So all of a sudden, the labor and delivery nurses were much more in demand and they commanded higher rates.
Yeah.
Okay. The next part of that was a couple months later, we saw the variant come, the Delta variant. And so COVID came up. And so that nursing demand crossed to multiple areas now and meant that their pricing went way up. And then finally, we had the vaccination requirement. So it was sort of a triple whammy, one after another. And of course, that brought the market, supply market down. Now, what was really exciting about that, and I think it's just a great story of HR and procurement working together, and then the benefits of getting the right process in place. We had a great friend who was an internal champion and really helped slowly get through the organizational changes to say, hey, we've been working with one supplier to get these, you know, and we're paying these rates for these specific job types. But now we can go out to suppliers B and C and find that they have very qualified candidates, just like A, after we define that, and you can pay less. So, of course, those internal conversations took some time and took some effort, but finally she broke through with one of her key stakeholders and then another, and then they saw some results, and then it sort of built in the organization. Now, that was all in the cost savings mode. But when the time came that all of a sudden they needed to find nurses and find bodies to come in and help deliver those babies and, yeah. and you know, treat those patients, well, the same structure that we helped them set up to find competition and better pricing also helped them find more access to talent. And so it was really exciting to see that come through and you know, doing things the right way pay off in multiple different dimensions.
And that's, it's so interesting to hear that. And that's a great sort of real life case example that I think everybody can relate to, even if you're not part of the baby boom, right? but, you know, so often I think procurement falls into this trap of saying, okay, this is how we source stuff and this is how we source services. But there's actually a lot more in common, at least in terms of process and how you do things and standards, than we might otherwise think. And another one of those areas where there's more overlap, although it may be a little more challenging on the services side, is the idea of appropriately capturing, I guess you would say, specs and requirements, right? So the details that you put into a statement of work that are going to focus that resource on their deliverables or their performance objectives. And if you don't get that right, as we've seen in product categories and in other examples with different kinds of third-party services, not getting that right can really cause long-term problems in terms of both getting value and in just plain getting the work done. How often do you see issues, whether they come from procurement or HR or for the company in general, in capturing the right requirements and project milestones in statements of work?
This is an area we spend a lot of time on at Brightfield. I lead the services procurement practice. And for a long time, SOWs and services procurement were sort of that other category, right? A lot of times you'd say, well, you know, this is facilities, this is marketing, this is IT. And then we've got these various agreements with consultants and there's kind of a hodgepodge, but we'll put it all together. And that's what we'll call it. And it was often unmanaged spend. Of course, there were a lot of things in there that were kind of C-suite pet projects, whether it's, you know, something like the consulting firm that's advising on strategy or the audit or various things like that. But it's really interesting to look at this while we're looking at staffing, because what we see, and this, just to your point, is that a statement of work is really supposed to be a statement of the work, right? It's supposed to define the work that is to be done. And you state the work when you don't want to just hire a person, right? We say, this is the work we want you to do. Now, we find that a good quality statement of work is more the exception than the norm. And so often an SOW kind of devolves into what's more or less staff augmentation, time and materials. Now, there are times when that's absolutely appropriate, but in a lot of cases, the organization is looking to offload some risk. They're looking to say, hey, here's what we want. This is how it needs to perform. And that's why we're putting it on this statement of work. That's why we're trusting you and hiring you, consultant or, you know, firm, to get this done. If that in word or in actuality is really more of a staff augmentation, just bringing on resources. If the focus is not the results, but the resources, then you really just have an expanded team and you don't necessarily have the benefits of specific expertise, specific guarantees and performance, or other things that you would get in place. So we spend a lot of time analyzing these agreements. We've got artificial intelligence that can go through and quickly look at thousands and say, hey, these are the ones that are much more likely to be a higher risk of just staff augmentation. Part of that is looking at the rates and saying, well, if this is really staffing more or less, then why are we paying these 80% premiums for these folks instead of just getting them through a staffing channel and paying much closer to market? And then a lot of it is the quality and the risk, saying, well, if this agreement is supposed to achieve this goal, then we need language in here that really enforces that. And we need to make sure the relationship with the supplier reflects that.
Now, when you talk about that relationship, because whether it's contingent workforce or whether it's services procurement that's SOW driven, we are talking about paying money for access to skills and services. But the free bonus you get with that is the person's personality. Now, is there a component to services procurement that involves more of a soft skills or cultural fit type of consideration, like procurement would think about with a consulting engagement, or like HR would think about with a direct hire? To what extent does the person's ability to work well with the company have to factor into them being selected for a project?
That's an excellent question, and it's actually relevant because a lot of companies are standing up their own sort of direct sourcing programs where they have access to pools of individuals that they know. And so rather than going through a staffing firm who will, you know, put out an ad and try to find somebody that's got the skills that match, they can go directly to their own pool of talent. And of course, there are multiple benefits of that. I think the soft one that you just mentioned is probably the biggest, because somebody knows the organization, they can jump in and start working quickly. Yeah. But also, there's much less need to pay a high overhead, because you're not paying for recruiting, and you're not paying for some of those other things for finding the talent, which is generally a pretty high premium for the staffing companies. I think of that as one of those sort of preference premiums. And in a consulting context, it would show up as, hey, this company knows us well, right? We've worked with this firm before. They've got domain expertise, not just in their field, but also they know our company. So there's going to be a less of a ramp up time. We're going to just get to be efficient really quickly. We trust them. That's another thing that comes up. Now, we trust them can be an expensive sentence. I think that's in my book.
I was just going to say that. Oh, they already know us. I'm hearing the little cha-ching, cha-ching in my head. That sounds expensive.
Well, and with all of these, I think the point is to build the conversation, not to end the conversation. So yeah. If a stakeholder says to me, well, you know, these guys are the best in the business, we trust them, one of these other sentences, I think the response would be, well, that's great. Let's talk that through a little bit more. Why is that the case? If you were to compare this firm to company B, you know, what would be the difference? And what is that worth for us? Is that giving us speed? Is that giving us lower risk because we know they'll stand behind what they do, et cetera? And so the point is simply to just talk that through, make sure we're not sort of, again, talking in a generality that ends the conversation, says, well, then that's our only choice. But instead, we're unpacking it a bit and saying, well, this is a value. Let's put that value in this range. And now we know that, yeah, we can consider somebody else, but they wouldn't have this extra value.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, as we wind that down, we actually come to the point in the conversation that, in my opinion, is the very hardest part for anybody that appears on The Sourcing Hero, but that I have heard multiple times from the listening audience is their favorite part, which is to ask you for your perspective on what the idea of a sourcing hero, or if you prefer something a little bit broader, the idea of heroism in a business context, what does that mean to you?
I'm going to refer back to the anecdote I told about the West Coast healthcare provider, because I'm thinking of a specific person that is sort of my sourcing hero in that story. And that is not someone that carries sourcing in their title or procurement, but it's somebody in HR who was the lead of the contingent workforce group internally. And we, as you know, the sourcing team, speaking a little broadly, I was an external consultant, but there were others that were sort of in that sourcing role. We showed up and said, hey, here's what we found. Here's how you save money, because that was the charge. And again, we had the authority here because the board of directors and the executives were saying, hey, we need to save this much money. And it was a very aggressive target. So we did our research. We went out to the marketplace. We found how we could do it. We came back with a plan. But then, of course, we know it doesn't end there. She had to go to her stakeholders, to folks that were hiring nurses. And again, I feel like it's a great example because when you're talking about the quality of hiring someone, that sort of gets amplified even more if it's yes. somebody who's caring for the lives of other people, quite directly, quite literally. So when the head of nursing or the head of the ER clinic comes back and says, hey, I don't really like you, you know, sourcing person coming in and telling me who to hire and what suppliers to use and what skills are needed for the job, because I know that. And I'm the one who has to answer for this every day. Well, that's a very valid objection. To me, the heroism came in this person, and I know there are a lot of people like this, that hear that and can maintain the relationship and can come back and just gently challenge that and say, well, great, you're right, and I'm not saying you're wrong, and I want us to explore other options, and I want us to be able to be sort of bigger picture about this, because I know that you trust this firm, but that doesn't mean we can't use somebody else. And let's define what that value is, and let's try testing it. And of course, this didn't happen in the first meeting, Kelly, and you know that. This happens over time. And I think what it takes, and actually learned later that this person who's my sourcing hero had a military background, and I feel like maybe that's related in some
Interesting.
Way.
Interesting.
Because I really think it takes grit and persistence and patience to see the long-term benefit, to go back to these folks. You know, it's so easy for it to get antagonistic, right? When yes. we come in with our solutions and the stakeholders say, well, you know, no, don't tell me what to do, or that's not what we want. Because in our mind and on our spreadsheets, we can demonstrate that we're right. Yet that's not really what the answer is. So my sourcing hero is that person who is internal and who takes it over the long term, who has the relationships inside the organization and can build those relationships even while challenging the status quo. What that meant in this case, as I've already mentioned, is not just that the company saved money, but that when the chips were down, it was hard to find people to staff these emergency rooms and operation rooms and pediatric care units, that this company was able to do that.
And it's such a great example, not only of sort of a quiet ability to stay the line and listen, right, and stay on focus, but it is also worth acknowledging, isn't there a special place in our hearts for those people that have successfully transitioned from military service into the private sector and what they bring with them to some of these challenging situations? I always love hearing stories of people that have not only successfully made that transition, but have truly landed in a place that can leverage and make use of their skills, all of them, whether from military service or from professional training. And absolutely, there is no question that is a great example of real world heroism. So Jack, if people would like to learn more about your books or simply reach out and connect or ask a question about what they've heard today, what is the best way for them to get in touch?
Absolutely. Well, they can certainly find Brightfield online at brightfield.com. That's easy. And I'm one of the few Jack Quarles. I think I'm the only Jack Quarles on LinkedIn. It's still not that hard to find my last name, which is like Charles, but with a QU. And happy to connect with folks there.
That is awesome. Jack, thank you so much for sharing your time and expertise today. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sourcing Hero Podcast. Join us again next time for more true stories of sourcing and business heroism performed by your colleagues and peers. Look for the Sourcing Hero wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe. Finally, don't forget, sourcing heroism is taking place all around us every day. Keep your eyes open and you're bound to see it. Until next time, I'm your host, Kelly Barner. Stay well, and always remember that you can be a hero too.